Saturday.
What day is it today?
Wednesday.
Exactly.
Welcome to Film Fight Club. I'm Glenn Falcon, I'm a Falcon Screen, and we are joined by freelance writer and critic Virat Nehru.
Hello, hello.
And Sydney filmmaker Chris Evans.
Hello.
In our long-standing Film Fight Club tradition, the Sydney Film Festival had launched their annual program in their 67th, so we are covering it as their first virtual film festival. We're going to be getting to that a little later in the program. We will also be talking about The Lovebirds, the new Netflix film with Kumail Nanjiani, and we're going to be doing the Snyder Cut. The Snyder Cut is happening. We can confirm it. It's not a joke anymore, though it's still a joke.
You might even hear some more optimistic perspectives on it than this introduction promises.
Yeah, I joke, it's out cynical, but I have a very non-hot take on this, so we'll get to that a little later in the program.
But honestly, like I was feeling very nostalgic and now thinking back about it, because Sydney Film Festival time, and we've had this annual tradition of doing it as we receive the fresh program in our hands and doing it at the town hall steps. And remember, we just flick through the program and we just do what it's saying.
This is really the episode where we can pretend that we're not under lockdown. We've actually gone back in time 2 years. It's like, let's talk about Zack Snyder's Justice League. Let's talk about the Sydney Film Festival.
Talk about Kumail Nanjiani movies.
His new movie. Yeah.
His new movie, The Big Sick. How cool was that?
Yeah, I'd rather focus on that one. But we'll talk about The Lovebirds later.
We will. For the moment, just some things that are happening around town that you can still see amidst social distancing. The Movin' Bed Cinema has rebranded as a drive-in moving car. They're opening tomorrow night, and they have a lot of films screening throughout. I know that a lot of those screenings are already booking pretty fast, haven't booked out already. Knives Out, the other screenings. So that's something. I read today that the entire box office tally for Florida in 1 week was this one drive-in cinema on the edge of Miami. So... hey, Sydney, you can go to drive-in car and maybe...
maybe that is the new business model that theaters should look for.
Well, I was actually reading just last night that in Florida, they're planning this incredible new drive-through theater complex, which is 5 different screens, and it has on-site camping, restaurants, a massive sort of lighthouse in the middle. It's going to be called the Lighthouse 5 Cinema Complex, with the 5 screens situated around the lighthouse. Wow. It looks
definitely
awesome.
Horror movies only.
Yeah, it'd be great. It'd be a great place to watch The Lighthouse, right?
Yeah, great place to watch Shutter Island.
Yeah.
Also coming up this week, Static Vision are going into their 10th week of screenings at 6 p.m. on Friday night with Prototype, a video compilation of shorts and video art, with including interviews with the filmmakers and creators. In addition, Monster Fest on Friday night and following that at 9 p.m. are doing their second season of screenings, and you can go on Facebook, watch there for free, and just chat with the crew and watch some schlocky horror. And Cinema, the Science Film Festival, is also starting and screening online from June 1st. Another thing that's happening is that as of June 21st in Victoria, the Andrews government has announced the circumstances in which cinemas will be allowed to reopen. Certainly social distancing measures have to be maintained, but individual screens will be able to operate. This is a change. We don't necessarily see that major tentpole features will be coming, because they'll want them to be able to open to fill out cinemas in major jurisdictions. A lot of smaller cinemas like the Golden Age, which you can apparently hire out now for a whole night with a bunch of friends, will screen individual films, retrospectives, some festival kits, stuff that would screen at this year's Virtual Sydney Film Festival.
And it's a gamble, I think, for cinemas, because there's no content coming out, right? They need to just do the retrospective screenings. But is that enough to make your business on? I guess it's going to potentially bring in more money than selling Chuck Tops.
Yeah,
times are tough.
They are doing that. Randwick and a few others are attending Newtown over Chalk Tops. And another thing we didn't mention, that Golden Age actually had the curated online series of films, their own little streaming service that you can get access to. They have a lot of great flicks on there. I think a few people will go and support their locals, like the Sun Theatres, the Orpheums. People will venture out. And granted, the first thing a lot of people want to do when they get outside won't be to sit in the darkened room with a bunch of strangers, but many will, and many will acclimatize to going back to the cinema more regularly, as we always have. And this is the start of it, for at least in Victoria.
To update on what we were saying last week, I doubt Tenet is still coming out in July. It hasn't been officially delayed yet, but there was a new trailer that simply said coming soon to theaters.
Our views have not changed.
Yeah.
But we will review it. We will see the new Nolan. We're going to talk about the Sydney Film Festival program in the moment, but to note, we are one, the Global Film Festival, which starts, today, which is a compilation of entries and additions from many film festivals, Tribeca, New York, Karlovy, many around the world, Berlin included. Sydney Film Festival is the Sydney edition, the Australian edition. And as of today, the two films that have been contributed by Australia have been announced. Ivan Sen's Mystery Road and Rachel Perkins' Marbo. And that'll be available to screen until June 5th.
I think what's the more exciting thing about this whole program is that you can decide when you want to watch it. And I think given everyone's working from home in a situation like that, having that freedom to choose when you want to watch your film is actually beautiful. And I think one of the other beautiful things about the program is the masterclasses and talks that are actually being scheduled as well that you can listen and tune into with a lot of famous directors. So I think it's a beautiful program. I think that everyone should look out for it. It's on YouTube for free, which is amazing.
I mean, if you're going to go to a virtual film festival instead of the real thing, being able to choose when you watch the movies is like the bare minimum.
Yeah, but still the fact that it's free and the licensing restriction that all the film festivals come together and work that out, incredible that we are having
that. It's true, yeah. But it is a fairly limited selection from all the festivals.
Yeah,
I'm just pouring cold water over utopian optimism.
I did enjoy the masterclasses selection with like Guillermo del Toro and other directors, which you don't often get to hear as much in the public eye. I think it's interesting to see what their perspectives are going to be like. So yeah, that's what I'm actually excited about. The movie is less so.
Yeah, I also, Sydney Film Festival for the general program have talks and additions and introductions ancillary to the main films. It is similarly a on-demand program. I do like the idea of, like at a festival, actually sitting down at a specified time and watching it. Granted, you get some flexibility, but and maybe it's more on us to arrange to watch with others at the same time as I'd be doing for other film and musical watchers. But this is the flexibility is good. It means more people will be inclined to pick up more tickets. We're going to get onto that in a moment. Just one other thing to note. Foxtel have launched their separate streaming service, Binge, for $10 a month. Game of Thrones, Sopranos, or a lot of shows that are popular are on there. Some that are on other streaming networks, some that are new to it. It looks good.
It's an interesting outcome because for a long time, a lot of the stuff you want, basically all the HBO shows, have been locked up under Foxtel On Demand, where you need to have an expensive monthly Foxtel subscription to watch them. And more people are saying that's just not worth it. They'd like to watch those shows, but there are other ways they can watch them, like going to iTunes and renting it. And Foxtel is doing very badly at the moment.
Yeah, for what it's worth, like I have Netflix, Stan, Amazon, and Disney, but Foxtel, where you pay, I'd pay for Foxtel for a month. It hasn't been worth me. I get Foxtel when the rugby comes around every year. Otherwise, it hasn't been worth me. This could be. And this
but
is
now
basically the stuff
with
I want.
Sports, I think we have Kale, right? We have Kale Sports, which is essentially...
Well, no one's been watching Kale Sports, as I understand it. Oh. But yeah, the Foxtel and Kale are both struggling financially. Foxtel, especially because there's been no sports going on, their subscriber rate was already on decline. And then suddenly it's this big financial shock with COVID-19.
But just generally, don't you guys feel like there's too many streaming services now? Like,
yes.
I just kind of feel like, even though they're like, everything is $10 each, if I just keep piling them on together, it still feels like a substantial investment on a monthly basis.
It's think you want the number...
$60 a month.
There's Mubi and Tubi, which are free. Canopy's great. There's a lot of ones out there that are good. I can't get Canopy at the moment because I have to go sign up at public library. My public libraries aren't open.
Yeah.
Canopy is great. Demand has a lot of great stuff too, and it's free.
I think I could be wrong here. It could be that we all just suck it up and get used to paying for, you know, one or two different ones as that, you know, every month and switching the ones we subscribe to. But my feeling is a lot of these guys are going to go out of business because it's just too competitive a market.
Yeah.
And
that's why I like
consolidate down to like three or four competitors again.
I think that's why I like what Mubi did with Mubi Library. I think given we don't have access to Criterion and all Filmstruck, and I think Mubi Library and having that as a selection, which you're not restricted to watching one movie a day, I think is a boon for Australian audiences who want to watch auteur cinema, quote unquote. So
Mubi's a company that gives you something completely different to all the other streaming.
So I think they've really set themselves apart, and they're really, really excited for what they keep adding to the library because now it's
getting bigger.
But something else to stream come June 10th through 21st is the Sydney Film Festival. Now, we've covered it each year. This is distinct. Importantly, there are 33 films and several shorts and additions to it. There are 16 world premieres. A lot of them are there are many Australian features. 74% of the films are directed by women. which is a huge uptick from previous festivals.
That's what happens when Voices of Women in Film is one of the only parts of the program this year.
Yes, in addition to the SBS On Demand, which is probably one of the most looking forward to, and a few premieres, including an Eliza Scanlon film.
That is correct. I think your Women in Voices in Film selection is the most exciting in terms of premieres and features from international film festivals. And you can watch the whole package of 10 films for $99, which I think is a bargain when you think about it. So even the affordability of watching these films is quite reasonably priced. And I think anyone who was actually wanting to see these films can they're very reasonably priced. And, you know, when you think about it, it's pretty exciting.
To pick up on Chris's earlier point, I'm excited for this. I think it's great they put it together. I think that every film festival around the world is in the same position where they don't have the glut of new films they got otherwise offer. So they're looking at some new ones, many retrospectives. Certainly Sydney, more than most, have the ability to draw on films they have screened before, very prominent ones that have got subsequent commercial releases. They've done that. They've got a very good selection. I think this will draw a lot of people in. I think people who are hoping for something akin or identical to Sydney Film Festival's and programs in years past, you will be left wanting in great respects, but there is a good lineup. Woman at War is in there. France Ha, some of the great Leave a Trace, my favorite film from a couple of years back, which also premiered at Sydney Film Festival. There's some great ones in the SBS On Demand.
I Went to Sleep, which is 4 hours of nothingness. But yeah, you know.
I'm sorry, Baby Teeth's not in there, excuse me.
So it's a very exciting. I think the SBS On Demand collection, the top 40 that they've chosen, is a fascinating cross-section of films, especially. I think if you missed out on any of the best from Sydney Film Festival in previous years, it's a good way to catch up.
Let the right one in is in there. Omar was really great from several years back. The Guilty, which is, I think, also currently on SBS On, really, really good. And The Red Turtle, some gorgeous films in here.
Cemetery of Splendor.
The Square.
Yes.
Strangerland, really underrated. Look, it's a huge undertaking, and importantly, people can watch it around the country. I have friends who sometimes can't fly in for Sydney Film Festival or would otherwise like to enjoy it with, and I now have the opportunity to sit and watch a few films with them. And ones I'm certainly going to be looking up Leave No Trace and Women at War with a couple of mates and saying, hey, we're going to pick a few Sydney Film Festival flicks. Like, these are the ones I'm watching first. And Education's in. They haven't seen that since release.
Oh, yeah. Education. Hardy, basically, the film that put Fahadi. No. No,
A Separation.
A Separation is on there. Education is also on there.
Oh, wow. Okay. Both of them are in there. Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. A Separation I will also be rewatching. I haven't seen that since release either.
Yeah. It's much better than An Education.
Yeah, I would not disagree.
I think there's a really hit and miss films on there, according to me.
The Other Side of Hope, the new Aki Kaurismäki film is in there.
I think it's more of a miss, but sure.
There's films in there that I think are really great, and there's like the crowd pleasers that I thought actually weren't that good at all, and movies that just could do really well in the SFF bubble, like Rafiki. Rafiki is historically significant for African cinema.
Yeah.
And it's totally the thing that would sell tickets to at a film festival. Like, wow, a lesbian story.
I saw it and I just kept my mouth shut when I saw it. That's like, you know.
Yeah, it's not a good movie.
In the popular majority in terms of opinion.
Like, it's the kind of thing
if
that.
If you didn't like a film, say so. We always do.
No, but you know, I wanted to support the fact that we are trying to reach other regions of you know, where we usually don't get films from. So from that perspective, I was happy that we got a film, but I wasn't sure of its merit.
Yeah, there's fantastic African cinema that doesn't regularly get played at the Sydney Film Festival or elsewhere. The Sydney African Film Festival finishes around this year with some great South African cinema, which wouldn't otherwise get around in Australia. Right. And if not for the festival going virtual, wouldn't have seen Australian screens at all.
It's interesting.
One of my most hated films from the program was 2 Days, 1 Night, which won, I think.
I think that's a great film.
Festival, which I hated. So, you know, clearly there is a lot of distinctive opinions. So it's not like, you know, whatever Sydney Film Festival likes is we're all on board for that. So, yeah, I don't like the Darden brothers in general. But yeah, this was one I particularly hated.
I will not drag out the episode by getting into an argument with you over that one.
Okay.
Except to say that I disagreed about as much as one can.
So there's a lot of the regular Sydney Film Festival strands, the Screenability section, the Dendy Short Film Awards, and there's actually pretty cool packages. I always struggle with each year with the Flexi Passes. They can get quite expensive, but this year you can get individual tickets, you can get whole strand tickets, you get a whole festival pass, and I think it's a lot more affordable than in previous years. So I think it's going to be open it up the same way as the virtual platform will for a lot of people who wouldn't otherwise go to the center of Sydney or to Sydney at all. So this could actually, I think it will actually expand the reach of the festival, which is pretty
definitely
good.
Definitely, and they have a very good documentary selection as well, which I think docos usually get they get burdened by the features and they have to compete. But this time around, there's more of an equal split given, you know, we have a limited selection and the docos are getting more of a representation in there with the features as well. So
it's sort of a rising tide lifts all boats thing with the movies at the Sydney Film Festival. Things end up selling out because people have committed to the festival and they're like, oh, what's on? And then like, oh, this sounds interesting. I wonder if there's going to be the same effect this year where you don't have some of the big ticket things that pull people in. You've just got the documentary program. If people are going to go, oh, limited selection, oh, well, this one sounds interesting, or if you're just not going to have as many people subscribing. I mean, it's going to be an interesting test. Running this online thing, it's completely different to any Sydney Film Festival before, obviously.
And I think that's why I think the pricing is interesting. The buying it as a package is cheaper than buying individual tickets. And I think
$100 for every movie. I mean, say look,
less than $10. I think $99.
The Sydney Film Festival get like a 10-person pass. Get a couple get a 10-person pass and see 5 films. That's going to cost them $100-something. Now they can see all of it for less than twice of that. So a lot of families, a lot of groups of friends will get it. Now you can have 5 people over. It's going to be worth it for a lot of folks. They'll just split the cost.
And, yeah, exactly. Like if you're living in the same house, only one person can buy it and you can split the cost and you can all watch together on one screen, essentially.
Yeah, well, I mean, well, not that we're suggesting that's what you're supposed to do, but I'm sure a lot of people will...
I'm still saying people can buy tickets. I'm not saying don't buy. You know, but if you're in the same house, you can make it a more collective experience. That's where I was coming from.
And Tangerine, too. Really good movie from a few years back.
Oh, yeah, Sean Baker. You know, one of the best talks as well. I think his insights were fascinating given the way it was shot. You know, it was quite revolutionary at the time.
You know, everyone's shooting things on smartphones, especially given the current
isolation.
So, yeah, that is Sydney Film Festival 2020, and we'll be covering it more in the coming weeks. And this festival is running from June 10th to 21st, and tickets are available now. In polar opposite news, you may remember from a few years ago a movie called Justice League, if we can call it a movie.
You may not remember it.
It was very, very bad.
It was really bad, yeah.
And a group of people on the internet decided that there was a version of it out there that was good, directed by someone who had made 2 other very bad DC films. But they persisted, and in social isolation, as Zack Snyder and a few others thought, we're going to make this happen. So they made it happen. And now we have the Snyder Cut coming to us.
After... I have a conspiracy theory. I think there was no such thing as a Snyder Cut.
There never after was. The whole of course uproar.
There was. No. The whole never was a Snyder Cut thing being discredited.
Secret. Shot it afterwards in secret, just so there could be...
There was a Snyder Cut. It's an unfinished cut, right?
Yes,
there was a print.
Yeah, there's
a heavily
unfinished version.
Yeah, but there was, firstly, a 4.5-hour cut with all Snyder's footage, and then an unfinished 2-hour, 40-minute version. And then Snyder left the production and Joss Whedon came in and there were reshoots and such. But there's the raw material to complete the cut. They just need to do new effect scenes. So it's going to come to $30 million to finish this.
Will he have the mustache? As long as he has the mustache.
But the thing is, he won't have the mustache because this footage was shot before the new footage where Cavill had the mustache and they CGI'd it out to give Superman that weird upper lip look he has in the final film.
Yeah.
No mustache.
Are we talking about the 4.5-hour version?
Well, it sounds like that's actually what they're going... The 4-hour version is actually what's going to be released.
Because they're releasing it in installments, reportedly.
Yeah, they're going to make it a miniseries. They're still unsure, but the miniseries option is up there. Because it's like, well, if it's not a theatrical release, why does it have to be 2 hours anymore?
I might as well watch a Lab Diaz movie. Like, well,
I think it'll be bad. You know, I think the Justice League we got was bad. But it also showed a big tonal mismatch between the really grim Snyder feeling material and then suddenly the super jokey Joss Whedon material. I'm sure Snyder's Justice League would also have kind of retrofitted in humor because the executives were demanding it. But Whedon did complete rewrites as well as reshoots. I think the film would be improved by not having this big tonal chasm that you have to work to rectify as you watch it.
Yeah, I'm very curious about it. I think anyone, even casual fans, even people who didn't like it, will be curious about what's out there, given they shot so many hours of footage, given it's different to the extent that Darkseid is a character as opposed to the other villain we got, the Sun.
He won't be in it much. It's still mostly going to be Steppenwolf, as I understand.
But with this, it's had such traction over so many years. A part of it was a joke. Part of it was fans who seriously wanted it. And it got to the point where it got beyond a meme, beyond a social media extravaganza. Gal Gadot, the stars of it started tweeting about it, and it's happened. And separate to the consequence for it as a piece of art, it's one of the key examples of a fan movement pushing for a film to be made or a version to be released or getting and getting it. This could change how studios interact more generally with fan bases, because fan bases now know that, hey, we can get our way if we push for it enough, which isn't always a bad thing. I don't mind fans coming out and saying, we want this, we want that, but this will totally shift how studios expect and interact, how fans expect to interact with the studio system and filmmakers and film production companies.
Well, that's a more optimistic view. What I'm thinking is going to happen is the completely opposite thing, where studios are going to rub it in fans' faces saying, is this the version you wanted? 4 hours of this stupidity? Really? So by putting it out, they're just going to end this debate once and for all and saying, well, let us have the control. But clearly, when directors have control, this is the kind of shit they put out, essentially.
I think it's a cool thing, even though I don't think Snyder's a good director.
How many biblical allegories are going to be in there in that 4 hours? Yeah.
I don't think the movie will be good.
Like every time there's a biblical allegory.
But like, I'm curious to see how it's different, right? And, you know, there is a director with a vision, for better or worse, that was taken away from him after a family tragedy was involved.
That's true.
I think partly the studio kind of just wanted to take it away from Snyder after two bombs and fears about how the film was going to turn out. And probably they had a really good excuse after he had to step away to just change the tone and retrofit another director onto it.
Yeah.
But Snyder had to step away because he just suffered a horrible family tragedy at the time, as had the producer, who is his wife, Deborah Snyder. It's good, I think, that he's able to go back and make the film he wanted to make. I pretty much see this as a positive.
Yeah, look, I've been being saccharine and joking about this. I don't like Zack Snyder's director. I like 300, even though I think it's as good as the comic. I think he's made a lot of bad films. I think he's made a lot of very, very bad films. I'm referring to Sucker Punch, among a couple of others. But
oh yeah, he's made some shockers.
But the fact
he has a vision.
Was Watchmen Snyder as well?
Yeah, also very bad. But yeah. the fact is this, and I say this across the board, if a director, be it Ridley Scott doing Blade Runner or anyone else, had issues with how they got the film that was released by God as regards studio interference or else, or didn't have the tech or didn't have the time and want to release a new version and have got the money to do it, all power to them. I'll watch it. It's interesting. I respect that. I will see it. I'm not a big Justice League fan, but I'm curious enough about this that I will go out for it. And that's fine. If it's bad, it's bad. If it's good, it's good. We'll judge. We'll promise we'll review it when it comes out. We are going to watch this.
I will watch it. Yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
Are we making a commitment? Oh God.
Okay. Yeah, you don't have to.
I'm
watching after all this. I'm watching the Snyder Cut, and
I think there'll be a lot of people.
I'm going to watch this.
Okay. I think there's a lot of people in that position who are like, well, I've been hearing release the Snyder Cut ad nauseum for the past 3 years.
Like release a crack.
Fine, I'll watch it.
Does this mean we're going to get the butt cut of Cats?
I hope so. No, it's the butthole cut.
Right, the butthole cut.
The butt cut, it sounds different.
speaking of release different versions of things, Disney and their Splash modification, they've done it again with someone's cleavage in a TV show.
This is like weird CGI coverings?
Yeah.
Just the thing
blurring
is,
her cleavage out. Like, why?
I wouldn't notice it if you didn't draw attention to it. So, like, I wasn't looking for it until
about this
made me look for it.
Disney are the worst, man.
Yeah. So, speaking of... that's the Snyder Cut. No, that's not fair. We'll review it when we see
we'll
it.
We'll find out.
Justice League wasn't good. But, hey, look, if he wants to release a new version, and he's got the backing for it, I'm all for it. We'll see it. We'll review it.
Yeah.
In the last 5 minutes, we want to talk about a new release, something we haven't done in a little bit.
Yeah. This film was... Yes, it's on Netflix. It's The Lovebirds. This film was going to be released in cinemas, but Paramount were the distributor, and they've sold things to Netflix in the past, like the Cloverfield Paradox, and they decided to sell this one.
Oh, too terrible.
Yeah, this one, I think they...
Was the right decision to make to sell it?
I think it was the right decision to make.
It would bomb at the box office pretty badly.
I think they saw that... there's going to be a crowd of films being released in cinemas when COVID-19 lockdowns are over and cinemas are allowed to reopen. Yeah. And this film would not stand a chance competing against some of the big heavy hitters that are all going to be crushed into the release schedule.
Tenet, Wonder Woman 84, and The Lovebirds. What are you going to pick?
I think also they knew that attendance for cinemas in general is going to be down for a while, and only those big heavy hitter blockbusters are going to have a chance. So
attendance on Netflix for this movie are going to be down anyway. So,
but this, first things first, this feels like a Netflix movie.
Yes. Oh yeah. This is like totally OTT platform kind of film.
There's nothing about it that feels like you have to go to the cinema to see this. Visually, it's super flat. The director is Michael Showalter. He directed The Big Sick that Kumail Nanjiani was in. And The Big Sick was really good, I thought.
Yeah.
But The Big Sick was carried by its script. And this is a really bad script. Bad to the point that it's like the movie's all right. I think the comic timing of the direction and especially Issa Rae is good. But the script is bad to the point that it's like, how did this get funded?
None of the gags in the script translate to the screen. I mean, they're not funny in writing.
It's not funny.
It's just bad writing. They're just it's not a gag.
But you know who makes it funny? Issa Rae.
Yeah.
I'd never seen her in anything before. She's really funny.
She has the screen presence to and the charm to really elevate a really flat script, which Kumail Nanjiani cannot do.
No, if she weren't here, the movie would be so much worse. She's working overtime trying to make this funny.
And sometimes she
succeeds. But Kumail Nanjiani, I've been saying since The Big Sick came out, this guy is a shocking actor, and you guys are the only two who agree with me.
All right, I like him in Silicon Valley. He's good in the role as the coder. It's funny, great material, and he has had years to develop it. I don't think he was good in The Big Sick. I think a part of it was that he was up against Holly Hunter, so many more talented actors.
Yeah, there's a scene where he's talking with Ray Romano, one of the emotional linchpins of the film. And Romano is so heartfelt and Nanjiani was just so flat. And that's what really got me.
He's mouthing lines and it just feels like, you know, you're literally just saying dialogues.
Yeah. So it's the same problem in this film. He's up against
one good line in The Big Sick. It's the 9/11 joke. Otherwise,
that was a great line. He's up against a really great comic actress here, and you can see how much she's putting in to elevate the lines, bring something to it. He's bringing nothing to it. He's just flatly reciting his lines.
Off. Like he doesn't even get the comic beats. He's like he can't even time his punches correctly.
No, he's really bad. But okay, the movie is very similar to Date Night, right? In that it's like the couple who are in this mystery chase scenario.
Yeah.
Going from place to place to place, you know, trying to solve this mystery, and there's violence.
And then there's a random crime syndicate. Like
there's a random
crime syndicate from Eyes Wide Shut.
Oh, the Eyes Wide Shut thing, yeah.
But oh my God, it's so stupid.
That sounds like Game Night.
Right. The problem is that I could not buy into this at all, simply from the fact that they don't go to the police. It justifies at the beginning, their car gets hijacked and used to murder somebody, and some people on the street see them. For some reason, these characters are allergic to telling anyone the truth. I'm just spoiling the first half an hour of the film here, right?
Yeah.
When they get approached by people on the street after the crime's happened and they're asked what's going on, they make up a bunch of excuses. For no reason. They don't say, someone just hijacked our car and killed this guy. It's like, oh no, this guy, we did kill it. Our car killed him, but what? Like they do this funny.
Yeah, as if they're implicated. At that point in time, they were not implicated. They self-implicated themselves.
They don't protest their innocence. And the film tries to justify them not going to the police by saying, oh, we're both minorities. The police aren't going to believe us. So they're going to persecute us, right? But
the social justice angle is so stupid in this movie.
It's so stupid because they don't have any other choice. Right. The other choice is let's go on the run from police and keep implicating ourselves further, which they do.
Often they choose.
A police detective calls them up and they make up more lies. And then they go to a place to meet with people involved in an obvious criminal conspiracy. And instead of the first thing they say, as it should have been when they were talking to the police on the phone and when they were talking to the bystanders who saw them, being, hey, we're not the guy, we've just picked up this phone and we're trying to clear our names. They instead make up a bunch of lies and pretend they, you know, when they're talking to obviously dangerous criminals. If you can't buy into the film on a basic level like this, then yeah, it's comedy, but you need to be able to invest yourself. And I'm just not to go with the script.
Their timing and chemistry.
It sounds like Queen and Slim, except Queen and Slim made sense in the context of that universe.
I was going to make that comparison, Glenn, because in Queen and Slim, it was they'd killed a police officer, right? In this case, it's just they witnessed a murder and their car was used. But when they're saying, oh, we can't talk to the cops because we're minorities and the cops are bad and racist, I was thinking like, okay, well, yeah, the cops may be bad and racist, but you literally have no other choice. And the first thing I thought when they gave this speech that outlines why they're not talking to the cops, this carjacking happened in public. Aren't there some CCTV cameras that would maybe prove that there was a man fitting the description that, you know, running through the middle of the city?
What I was thinking back then at that point in time was like, maybe somebody from the cops is involved and that's why they're not going to the cops. Like, that was what's going to be revealed.
That would have been way smarter if they were actually saying that.
Makes sense. Like, there's somebody, a dirty cop who's covering up tracks, and that's why they can't go to the cops, because you're not sure whether or not.
But yeah, the script doesn't work on the fundamental level because you can't buy into it. But what's most frustrating, if I can kind of spoil the whole movie here, is that the whole thing turns out to be a wild goose chase. There's no narrative satisfaction from the mystery point A to point B. Ooh, a clue, let's go to point C, story angle, because they never figure anything out.
The mystery is worse than that Adam Sandler, Jennifer Aniston Netflix movie.
The story and the mystery doesn't actually progress in any way. All that happens is that they extend out the chase and then it's resolved in a way that it could have been resolved in the first, right at the beginning of the movie, without any of the steps they took.
Like, could have been finished as a short in 10 minutes, essentially.
Well, no, the movie could have been 20, 25 minutes long.
Yeah.
Like, what happens at the end of it could have happened at the beginning.
If they just tell the truth.
If they just told the truth straight away. So that just magnifies the frustrations.
And there was no incentive to lie at that point in time. Like, they make
they had no incentive.
It reminds me of the old screwball comedies where all that needs to happen is one character saying one thing to another character and the scene or a movie would come to an end.
Yeah, but they had the charm to actually pull it off. And even then, there's not enough fast-talking quips in this movie to have that kind of rhythm either. This is such an off, like, from a comic perspective, the rhythm and beats in this movie are so off that there's no laugh-out-loud moments. Like, I know Chris mentioned there's probably one.
There's one funny scene, I would say, in the movie.
Yeah. It's just too late. For a comedy, there's no laughs. And I was just like, what am I watching?
Just the fact that it's that mystery narrative, but the mystery has no layers to it, no intrigue, and doesn't go anywhere.
As a suspense, doesn't succeed as a comedy.
All that journey that the characters go on accomplishes, since it doesn't accomplish anything on the narrative mystery level, is showing the couple falling in love with each other again, because it opens with them, oh, we're going to break up. But even from the beginning, I didn't buy into this, because their breakup speech for me, it didn't feel savage enough. It felt like an ordinary couple argument where they're arguing over dumb shit.
Yeah.
Right.
But like, I guess we have to break up now.
I was like, no, this is just the kind of thing that happens 4 years. This didn't seem that bad.
Yeah.
Like, it's just fundamentally the script isn't there at any point. So, and the film is such a generic take on other things that have been successful. So I guess I've just answered my own question I was about to ask, which is, why did this get funded? Oh, I guess it looks kind of like Game Night.
Yeah, it looks like kind of the other movies that succeeded or are like in right now.
He's made some bad choices. I didn't see Stupor, granted, but the reviews were very terrible. So that is Lovebirds. It is on Netflix, as is Date Night and Game Night. Queen and Slim may be available in VOD.
I'm sure at one point it'll be on Netflix.
Yeah, go watch it. It's really good.
It was really good. Yeah, much better than this.
So we'll be back next week with any fights you want us to fight about. Just let us know. And we will be talking more things in the film festival, things that are streaming, things that are happening around town. And you can find us in our social media.
Yes, twitter.com/filmfightclubau
or facebook.com/filmfightclub.
So have a wonderful night whenever you're listening. Enjoy movies, stay safe, and we'll see you again in a cinema soon. Good night.
Cinemas will return.